This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. The co-host, Christopher John O'Shea, is here with me. Chris?
Yes, sir. I am here and excited about the show.
Yeah. I wanted to do this show because many times I have said that the crises in America, you can talk about all kinds of things, you know, the debt of the country and the political dysfunction of the country and, you know, and income inequality and, all the different things that people are concerned about. To me, what we're going to talk about tonight is the true crises in our country, and that is the public education system in our country, I think, has failed our students, continue to fail them, and if we don't do something soon, we're going to have much bigger problems in the future than we could ever dream of. And so our guest is somebody who really went into a school system and tried to make a significant difference, and a mayor that supported him, and you got to give the guy credit for that, because that's not an easy political thing to do, is come up against some of the groups that are going to come against you in this kind of a fight. So tell us who we're talking to tonight.
Yeah, sure. Joel Klein has written a book, Lessons of Hope, How to Fix Our Schools. And to some might think an unlikely choice for Mayor Bloomberg, but turned out to be the person who now is really kicked off and part of the reform movement that's ongoing that we just don't hear enough about. Joel Klein served as chancellor of the New York City Department of Education from 2002 to 2011. Early in his career, he served as U.S. Assistant Attorney General in charge of the Antitrust Division of the U.S. Department of Justice. He was involved and spearheaded the suit against Microsoft for their monopoly. Deputy White House counsel during the Clinton administration and CEO of the U.S. headquarters of Bertelsmann. He currently serves as executive vice president at News Corporation and CEO of its education division, Amplify. He lives in New York City with his wife, Nicole Seligman.
Yeah. Joel, are you there?
I am. Great to be with you.
It's good to have you with us. And just a fun question to start off. You think Michael Bloomberg would ever run for a higher office in the United States?
You know, there are a lot of people who have talked to him about that over the years. I suspect it's unlikely, but one of the wonderful things about Michael Bloomberg is he's always unpredictable. And, you know, I remember 15 years ago, I was having lunch with him. He said, what do you think about whether I should run for mayor? And I thought to myself, the guy's one of the most successful business people in the entire world, living as well as anybody could live, doing interesting work, and why would you want the headaches of being mayor? And he said, because that's the way you make things better. You get involved.
Right.
So you never know with Mike.
Yeah, there's a campaign to draft him to run for mayor of London. Did you hear that?
That he said no to.
I know. Well, you know, but it was funny that, and he qualifies to be mayor of London, believe it or not. So.
Well, he's now been knighted.
Yeah, I know. That's how, you know, and
didn't
so
know
forth.
That.
Yeah, that's why he
that.
Was. That's why it was a serious campaign. It wasn't just a joke.
Okay.
Anyway, we're here to talk about your book, Joel. We're talking about Lessons of Hope and how you came into the New York City school system and tried to change things. You know, the thing that you pick up in your book is, you know, it seems to be that the school systems are all about the bureaucracy and the establishment and has nothing to do with educating children. Is that what I've read in here?
Well, I would say it has a lot to do with the bureaucracy and the politics and the unions and a lot of power players and big interests, and not nearly as much as it needs to have about giving kids the opportunities. So what you said at the outset really struck me as right. You know, we're facing a lot of issues of inequality. We're facing a lot of issues that are dividing the country right now. And the best solution we have to those issues is to really provide kids a high-quality education, something, unfortunately, we're not doing, and particularly not doing for those kids who grew up in poverty and who really need an education as their ticket to advancement. And the thing I learned and write a lot about in my book is, and with doing this for almost 10 years, was that we can do a whole lot better for these kids. And if we stop making excuses, stop playing politics as usual, and actually get about the work of educating them, I think we could see very different outcomes for our children.
But at the same time, Joe, that's absolutely true, and I know numerous things I would do if I was czar of the country to do that. I know what I would do. But these are extremely entrenched, powerful groups that, you know, you did a lot of good things, but they still have a tremendous amount of power, and you're not going to move them out easily.
Well, that's one of the reasons why you got to create alternatives. I agree with you. Look, powerful, I wrote in a piece recently, you know, power does not give up prerogative cheerfully. I mean, it's not the way the system works.
Right.
So what you need, though, the first point I want to make, and it goes back to your original comment about Bloomberg. I mean, he's a rare guy. To really go into politics and to be willing to take the heat and take on the tough battles is quite unique, and I think really a model that we need to see a lot of. For too long in politics, we heard people say, well, we can't change things because the forces that defend the status quo are too entrenched and too protected. And whether it was in education or in healthcare or in urban environment or urban development, Bloomberg made really big changes, and there were controversial things that had to get done. And so that's number one. And when it comes to schools, I think one of the ways to break up the power structure is to create alternatives. And one of the things we're proudest of, what we did in New York under Mike Bloomberg, was to open up some 200 charter schools during his tenure. Now, those are schools that are not run by the bureaucracy, that are not run by the unions, and that have to stand or fall on their own feet. Nobody guarantees them an admission. They have to earn their admissions. And as a result of that, all of a sudden you begin to see the power structure begins to be challenged. And what's wonderful about it is that families get options. And, you know, everyone who's listening tonight, I guarantee you, wants an option for their children when it comes to school. Nobody's going to say, I'll just take whatever school's in the neighborhood, whether it's good or bad. But the kids with the greatest needs in the high-poverty communities and who are really struggling, we basically tell them one and done. So in New York, by opening up these 200 schools of choice that were outside the power structure, we began to really break down aspects of the power structure and, most importantly, gave parents real choices. And probably one of the most astonishing numbers is the number I think is so informative. There are 20,000 seats available each year now in our charter schools in New York. You got 80,000 families, almost all families from high-poverty communities, mostly African-American and Latino families, that are seeking those seats. And that speaks volumes about what we can do if we're willing to really go against the power structure and create an alternative system that opens up opportunity for people.
Well, you know, hold that thought, Joel, because I want to come back and talk about charter schools and so forth and what you created in that, because it is extremely important. But I want to talk about another little issue on the charter schools that's current, more current, and we're going to address that when we come back from this pause, as Anita likes to tell me to call it, and she's got all kinds of great music lined up for her tonight. And and right now we're going to Nick Rehak in traffic. We'll be right back with our interview with Joel Klein. Take it away, Nick.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back with Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Joel Klein, and we're talking about his book, Lessons of Hope, How to Fix Our Schools. It's the crises of our country. They talk about inequality, income inequality. You fix the school systems, and you'll rectify that quickly. There are plenty of jobs out there, good-paying jobs. There are just not a lot of qualified people to take them, unfortunately. So, Joel, you talked about your charter schools and the advancement and what incredible benefit that was. But the thing that concerned me, and you talked about what an extraordinary man Michael Bloomberg was, but, you know, this is just my opinion, that the predecessor in New York City has tried to, he's the opposite of Bloomberg, in my opinion, successor in New York City as mayor. And he's tried to destroy this charter school systems, and the teachers union were the ones that specifically sponsored him to come in to try to attack these things. Is that just my irrational opinion?
No, but the good news is it didn't work. You see, one of the things you said before about sort of how status quos have defenders. Well, what happened when he tried to take on the charter schools is his communities rose up against him. I mean, it was an amazing thing. 11,000 people went up to Albany on a freezing cold day And all of a sudden, the governor came out to speak to them and pass legislation to protect the charter schools. And now the governor is trying to raise the cap. But, you know, politics is always a rough and tumble game. And so even though there are 80,000 people looking for 20,000 seats, and there are people who are really desperate about their kids' education, because every one of them could go to a traditional school, but they prefer these charter schools. Even in the face of all of that, the unions will push back, and oftentimes politicians will align with the unions. The good thing, I think, about New York is because the thing has been so successful, you've seen a parent movement here that's going to be unstoppable. And I think that that's one of the key things about changing the status quo. If we hadn't opened up 200 schools, if there hadn't been so much opportunity, I think it would have been a lot easier for somebody to say no more charters. But I don't think you can do that anymore.
President Franklin Roosevelt specifically wanted to keep unions out of government jobs, out of the school system, out of the government, and so forth. Is that a correct historical account?
Well, it's water over the dam, I'm afraid. But, but right now, we've got to deal with the realities on the ground. And one of the things I keep saying is what we really need the unions to understand is they got to be part of the change here, because that's critical. So they've really got to understand. Everybody I know wants choice for their own children in schools. Everybody. So creating a charter system of public schools that are for free, that nobody has to go to, that create options for people, that's the kind of thing I think the unions really ought to get behind. In New York City, at first, our own union opened up one of its own charters, and I was very supportive of that because I want them to be part of the solution here. So I think we've got to deal with the realities, but I'm hoping more and more that the unions become involved in trying to change the facts on the ground and really put the interests of children first. And if that doesn't happen, then I think it's going to be harder to get the changes we need for our children.
You say in the book on page 57, United Federation of Teachers is hell-bent on protecting even the least qualified teacher, and it costs $300,000 to fire a teacher, and there are 372 New York City teachers who sit in a room playing backgammon or whatever they want to do. You call it the rubber room.
Right. It's ridiculous. The whole system is ridiculous. Imagine paying teachers to sit for years and do nothing. It's a job protection process, and it's not really what children need. Those 372 teachers should either be back in the classroom if they're innocent of what the charges are, and if they're not, they should be out of the system. But the system is designed in a way to protect people almost no matter what. We had cases, some of them were really remarkable. We had a handful of cases where an arbitrator ordered us to put people back into school, and we refused to do it because they had previously been engaged in sexual involvement with our children, and we weren't going to tolerate it. So that's how ridiculous the system can be. And those kind of rules really need to change, and we need to treat teachers like the professionals that they are, not like they're in some kind of protection program.
Right, and you said that one out of 75,000 teachers per year were fired.
Yep.
On average, that's what it was. And that's one of the things I thought was encouraging, that on about year three or four, after working on it for a long time, you finally got some concessions in the teacher contract. But it was not without a whole lot having to happen. Momentum, another election, it took a while for that to happen.
But the main thing we got done, which was, again, people don't believe things like this. In the school system, if you are at a school and they don't want you anymore, basically you have a right to go to another school and demand a job, simply based on seniority. Even if a teacher's in a job, you can bump somebody out of a job. And so a school is going to take somebody else into the system, even though they don't want them, they can't interview them, they can't do anything. Now, that was one of the huge changes we got and one of the toughest labor negotiations imaginable, and I document this at length in a book to give people a sense of how really hand-to-hand combat this kind of stuff can be. But think about it, basically a system in which people are moved through the system, ending up at a different school because the first school didn't want them anymore, and then they have an automatic right to be there. And if they're no good, too bad for the kids.
You know, I've sort of coming across so far as Mr. Negative talking about all this. So let's talk about some of the cool things that you did, Joel. Education Leadership Academy, the Navy SEALs of principals and so forth, and some of the really cool people that came out of that.
Some great people. A guy named Shimon Wonka.
Yeah, I got him on my list. But tell us what this academy was all about and how it worked and what people had to give up to be a part of it and what you did in it.
Well, what we did, basically, we went to the business community. I knew this was not money we could pay from the budget. So we went to the business community and the philanthropic community, raised about $25 million a year. And like you said, we went out for the Navy SEALs. We went out for people who are really going to be change agents and who are going to try to buck the system, not just go along to get along. And we had a rigorous selection process. We brought in Jack Welch to chair the advisory committee and to imbue in people a spirit of what can-do change is all about. We brought in Dick Parsons, who was then at AOL Time Warner at the time, and basically created an organization outside the school system that became a juggernaut. And over the course of the years, trained up 60, 70, 80 people a year to run the different schools. What they had to give up was basically for a year of their lives, they went through a combination of boot camp for principals, which was very demanding and very grueling, and they got the chance to be mentored in the schools by some of the best we had in the city. And it became a model throughout the nation for the way to really transform schools. Because let's be candid, this is not true just about schools. It's true about any organization. In the absence of good leadership, it's not going to happen. And one of the things teachers would sometimes complain to me about justifiably is if they had a terrible principal, no matter what they try to do, it didn't work. And there are too many principals who think you can dictate to people rather than lead them, bring them together, empower them, get them on side to do the work that needs to be done. So that was a big part of our change initiative.
So tell us about Shimon Warnicker.
Did well, I say you know, it's funny you mentioned the Navy SEALs, because Shimon is a guy who was born in Chile, came to the U.S. at 14, actually went to the University of Maryland. When he came here, he lived not far from where you guys are. And a fascinating character, because he came to the school system after being in Army intelligence. That's why when you mentioned the Navy SEALs, I immediately thought of him. But he actually really applied U.S. Army intelligence principles to take over a school that was almost like a gang warfare site and turned the whole thing all around. I mean, he was a Hasidic Jew who we put up in a Hispanic school up in the Bronx. And everybody said, you can't do that, you can't do that. The guy became revered because he brought order and discipline and then academic improvement. And then he went up to Harvard to study and then came back and has now opened up something called the New American Academy, which is a whole new model of how to do schools. And he was one of so many people who I met through this process that were really change agents and really pushing new approaches, different ways. You know, without innovation, you're just going to be stuck with the same old, same old.
Well, Joel, you're going to have to wait one more pause that we have to take here at the 6:30 hour. We're going to come back, talk about some of the new things that are happening in the country as a whole, not just New York City, but happening in a whole that gives us this hope that you've really stimulated in this book, Lessons of Hope, How to Fix Our Schools. But right now, we're going to find out if traffic's moving smoothly in the Baltimore area. Take it away, Nick.
If you change your mind, take a chance on the 13 line. Take a chance on the Anchor Green. Take a chance on me. If you need me, let me know. Gonna be around. If you got no place to go, when you're feeling down.
Now back to more on Richard as well on Talk Radio 680 WCBL.
All right. There we go. Anyway, we're here with Joel Klein, and we're talking about Lessons of Hope, How to Fix Our Schools, and I believe they need to be fixed. And also, I think the undergraduate college level has also got a problem, and I bring that together because, You know, Joel, I think that unions should get on board with you, not because, you know, any other reason than if they don't. I'm a firm believer that the internet is such a disruptive force that it is going to destroy public education. There will be no place for teachers' unions if they don't get on board in the train as the internet pushes forward. And I just give you an example of something like Khan Academy, Salman Khan, and what Google and all these people that are behind this and what that can do to this country and the world, not just this country.
Yeah, well, you know, it seems to me there's a variety of reasons. First of all, the internet. Second of all, the compelling moral issue that we face as a nation. We can't continue to have this increasing divide, lack of social mobility, have the American dream become the American memory as we talk about it. So there's a variety of imperatives here, but you're absolutely correct that technology can, in some respects, in a very positive way, change the way we educate our kids. And if we don't come together to think of intelligently about how to mix the right human capital with technological assistance, we may end up in a worse situation.
I have a good friend who's a missionary, disciple, whatever you want to call him, to Nigeria. He's a Nigerian who's in the United States, and he goes back and forth from the United States to Nigeria to help them with all kinds of issues. But when he learned about something like Khan Academy and how that could help them educate their children in all these different areas remotely around Nigeria, they were so excited about what that could do for their country. What is your opinion of things like Khan Academy?
I think they're terrific. I mean, I've worked with Salman Khan over the years and done panels with him and admire enormously what he's doing. But I think it's one part of a multi-part strategy. You think about these massive open online courses that are out there now. My company does one in advanced placement computer science, and we're getting really great results. And so this is a way to bring education all over the globe in a very efficient and effective way. It's not the only way to do it, but there's so much opportunity. And when you think about it, you can get the best professors in the world to Nigeria, to Niger, to any place, I mean, every corner of the world, as long as they have access to the internet. So I think we're opening up a whole new set of opportunities. My own view is that technology, as long as it improves teaching and learning, will really become one of the great motivators in K-12 education. I've got a curriculum now and that we develop for kids in middle schools, which the teacher uses to really enhance the learning experience. And I got an email this weekend where some of the kids were saying that when the teacher says to use this curriculum, they start to cheer in class. That's something you don't hear often. So,
that's amazing.
It's really, well, I think this is one of the reasons, as I talk in the book, one of the lessons of hope is that if we come together, there's so much we can do. And technology can be such a reinforcement and an enhancer of it. You know, Sal's Academy, you think about, there's so many kids who can just sit there and literally go through thousands and thousands of lessons that they can learn about in any place in the world, whether it's on math, whether it's on banking, whether it's on science, I mean, it's just so powerful.
Well, let's tell our listeners about this, that they can go online to the website, Khan Academy, K-A-H-N Academy, and they can have a tutorial system or service for almost any subject, be it math or science or English, et cetera, on this that are relatively easy to learn for any, depending on what level of education your children are at. So if you think your children need some extra help in math, general algebra, he's got all kinds of programs that are easy to learn and work with. It's amazing. But you brought up the other topic, and I want you to talk about it for our listeners, because not many people are familiar with the power of this, and that's the MOOC that you brought up a second ago, Massive Open Online Courses. Did I get it right? Massive
You got it.
Online Open Online Courses. What's a MOOC? Tell people what it is. I know what it is, but I bet you most people don't know what it is. And why is it so cost-effective and powerful?
Well, you think about it, what it is basically an online course being taught by some of the great professors throughout the world. And what they're doing is they're doing this in a way that they're delivering the lecture, giving you the assignments, giving you the materials, and they don't charge for it. So they're all over the world now, and people can go online and take these courses, whether it's on computer science or on Shakespeare or on finance or on physics or whatever. It's sort of like Sal Khan, only this is a full course that you can take. Some universities now are giving it for credit. So we're beginning to see a whole different way of going about business, and you can get some of the greatest people in the world. And sometimes, for example, people create their own affinity groups. So if you and I are taking the same course, let's just say, from a Princeton professor on American history, so we got a couple of 3,000 people doing that, and there may be a couple of hundred of them in Baltimore. They get together once a month and talk about the stuff. Sometimes they meet at a coffee shop. So what you're beginning to see is people really kind of creating new forms of education, and it's very powerful and very exciting. There's a Georgia State University down in Georgia, Georgia Tech. They have one of the best master's programs in engineering. And what they did is make that available online through these MOOC courses for credit for students at about 10% the cost, 20% the cost of what it would cost to get the master's if you go to the university.
I was going to bring that up. I was thinking about that at Georgia Tech. I read about it. It's like $50,000 to do it at Georgia Tech, the master's. You can do these MOOCs and graduate with like an $8,000 cost and still get the same credential.
You got, boy, you did your research.
Yeah, I was fascinated because I'm into this. I think this is the greatest change that could change our country in the biggest way is if we get K through 12 and undergraduate degrees right, and the internet has the power to do it. And I really admire what you're doing.
Well, it's really exciting because this is why, as I said, I called the book Lessons of Hope, because I think there's a way forward. We don't have to be stuck. And one of the things I found with giving teachers the kind of tools and the assistance they need in the classroom, they're getting excited about it. We have on our program, we have a little simple thing. If a kid doesn't know a word on the e-reader that he has, all of a sudden he clicks on that and you get six little mini lessons tailored to that child alone. No teacher could possibly figure that out because you know some words, I know some words. The computer figures that out, drives the lesson to the kid. And then if the kid uses the word showing that she knows what it is in her e-writer, you get extra points for doing so. And the teacher gets a report each month saying how many new words Johnny learned and how many new words Miguel learned and so forth. And this is where you start to see how all of a sudden through technology, teachers can get much more involved and much more engaged. And the kids really love it. We have on our program, we have the kind of thing we found some books that it's hard to get kids to read in the beginning. So we've got a dramatic reading done by Chadwick Boseman, guy who starred in Jackie Robinson and starred in James Brown. The kids all know him. They love him. He read the first chapter of Frederick Douglass and got kids so involved and interested, they read the rest of the book on their own. This is all the power of technology.
Well, you're going to have to hold on because believe it or not, we're already at the last quarter hour of our show, and we're going to take our last pause, and then we're going to come back, finish up with Joel Klein, Lessons of Hope and How to Fix Our Schools, and just in the 45 minutes we've been together, I'm excited because there are people out there that are really making a difference in the school systems, and anyway, right now, we got to go to Mark Thibodeau and Weather. Anyway. Take it away, Mark.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back with Money, Rich, and Wealth. We're here with Joel Klein, Lessons of Hope, How to Fix Our Schools. Christopher?
Yes, and if you're just joining the show, Joel Klein was the Chancellor of New York City Department of Education for 9 years, and or I guess almost 10 years, and with the reform that they brought in there. And the thing I want to ask real quickly, Joel, is the people who worked with you, like the deputy that came to Baltimore, Andres Alonso, a lot of folks who you were affiliated with have gone out, and there's numerous of them that have gone out and have led other cities' systems, and where the reform movement stands now.
Well, it's one of the things I'm most proud of is that New York really became this resource nationally. You had people running Chicago, people running Louisiana, people running Camden, New Jersey, now someone running Detroit, people in New Jersey. I mean, it was really the sort of, it became part of a national movement. Where I see the movement now is basically moving toward much more school choice and more school opportunity for kids. Considerable amount of reform, but not without pushback. What we talked about at the beginning is part of the story, and there is certain concerns, some legitimate, about over-testing that we need to address. We need to make sure tests are used intelligently, that schools don't become obsessed with testing. And so I think, like any major sort of institutional change, you see some progress, some pushback, some progress, but I'm pretty confident that the arc of this is bending in the right direction. And one of the reasons that's true is because of the charter schools we talked about at the outset. Whereas in 10 years ago or 12 years ago when I started in New York City, there were very few charters in the United States. Today, 5-6% of our kids are in charter schools, and that number is going to double over the next several years. So I think there are a lot of positive forces in that whole discussion we just had about technology. I think that's going to become a big driver in terms of change. So for all those reasons, I think the school reform movement, while not without its opponents, is in very good shape. The other organization that's doing great work out there is Teach for America. Mm-hmm. So many of their young kids are not only teaching for a while, but then going on into leadership positions. People like Kevin Huffman in Tennessee, who is really terrific, Michelle Rhee and others. So there's a lot of good talent and a lot of good ideas going into the system, and that gives me reason for optimism.
So we only have about 4 or 5 minutes left, but, you know, I just wanted to bring up a story you talk about in the book about, you know, one day you're walking along and there's this gentleman, he calls out to you and he tells you, you know, his daughter was brought into a charter school, but his son wasn't. He was one of the more difficult schools. You expected him to give you a hard time, get his son out of there and so forth, but he didn't. He just honored you for the work that you've done and told you to press on. And, you know, and how much of an encouragement that is. And we just want to say press on because we believe this is a crisis in America. And we need more people like yourself who, as you said, you didn't take the job because you wanted to be politically motivated. In other words, you knew that that job could move you in political circles that you might have wanted to be. You did it because you loved what you were doing and you believed it was a cause that had to happen, and you wanted to be a part of it because you knew Mayor Bloomberg would support you in it. And so I just honor you in that, and I want to know, what can people do to get some access to some of the services that your company is offering and others in this reform movement, and how can we help this country move forward? If you just give us a little 3-minute spiel about what you think we can do.
So, great. First of all, thank you for your kind words and also for the opportunity to talk with you tonight, because you're absolutely right. The future of America depends on us doing a much, much better job educating all of our children and not just some of them. And what I think people can do is at several different levels. The first thing I really believe is they've got to prioritize these issues. When we see what's going on in the country and the amount of inequality and the sense that the American dream is being lost, that's not going to change unless people push back against the establishment. This is true in any area. We need leadership, but we also need a citizenry that's willing to say enough and get involved There's ways that partners with your school community. I was always amazed at how many parents in New York willing to come into the schools during the day, help tutor and mentor kids, particularly kids who are struggling. A lot of kids in New York really grew up in very challenged families, giving them a mentor or somebody to help support them. Really big stuff. Second thing is to really stay politically involved in the issue. And then in terms of learning about what's going on there, there's so much going on right now, but we talked about Sal Khan's thing. My company is called Amplify, and if you go to www.amplify.com, you get some sense of the things we're doing, the curriculum we're developing, the engagement for kids. So that's another way. And some of the games, we've got educational games now that are riveting for kids, and they have all the value and all the excitement of a great game, while at the same time, they're very high-quality education. So it's really been exciting for us to watch. So those are the things. And then one final note, which sort of implicit in a lot of what we talked about, is bringing everybody to come together. We talked about the unions. There was a guy in New York named Albert Shanker who was famous for being the most well-known and in many ways the most aggressive teachers union leader ever. And in 1985, he wrote a piece about called The Making of a Profession. And I really want to end on this note because I think we need to move teachers into a true profession like lawyers and doctors and others, a profession that's revered in this country by everyone. And when teachers are the most revered profession, that's when we're going to get the kind of results we want to see. If you look around the world that have great education systems, whether it's Finland or Japan or Korea or so forth, these places, teachers are the most highly respected. In Japan, they're called sensei, to really reflect honor and learned profession. And Shanker, way back when, said we got to move beyond collective bargaining into true professionalism. And now here we are 30 years later, and we still haven't done that. And if we can get a movement that really gives teachers the respect, the pay, and the professionalism, the whole package that they deserve, then we'll be on to something big.
Joel? I couldn't say it better. I think that was fantastic. It was a great interview. We honor you for the work that you're doing in this country.
Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for your time, sir.
My privilege, and thank you for the opportunity.
This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.